Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Cinema D'Amore. I'm Chuck Phillips, joined by
James Reinhardt
and Justin Morgan.
And we're closing out the year with an interesting film, a film all about New Year's Eve. I don't know too many others other than Gremlins 2 and New Year's Eve, I think, is the other movie, that bad movie that has a bunch of celebrities in it.
Ghostbusters 2?
Proxy.
Yeah, this felt like a Christmas Carol, but darker, and on New Year's Eve instead of Christmas Eve.
Yeah, that's a feeling I get. I guess to say, since we didn't mention it yet, the film is The Phantom Carriage, which is about almost 100 years old, I guess. I think it was released in 1921.
It's not about. On the day that this comes out, it is 100 years old.
Okay. So yeah, we're celebrating the 100th anniversary of this film, which, as James said, I got very strong Christmas Carol vibes from it. I didn't think anybody was going to be saved by the end of it, though. I thought it was going to go way darker and everyone's life was just going to be terrible by the end.
Yeah, I thought that too. I was like, oh, okay, this guy's going to die and, you know, have to live the consequences of his shitty life.
Yeah. But I guess to start it off, the film takes place on New Year's Eve with a woman on her deathbed, a Salvation Army sister, we're told. And she wants to meet a very specific guy, have him come over. That was interesting, the way it like introduces everyone. It doesn't tell you who any of these people are or what's going on. It just starts on that woman and she's like, I need to see David Holm. And everyone keeps going, where's David Holm? I'm like, am I supposed to know who this guy is already? Like, did I miss an intertitle or something telling me who David Holm is? Because he seems very important.
Yeah, I thought that too. I do really like the storytelling structure that this film uses, especially for a film that, as we said, is 100 years old, where it starts, you know, in media res, then as the film goes, you figure out who these people are and what their relationships are to each other, mostly through flashback. So it's really incredibly ahead of its time, I thought, as far as using flashback in this interesting framing device.
There's flashbacks in flashbacks. Keep going back. But yeah, we're introduced to David Holm. Appears to be some sort of vagrant, drunkard, hanging out in the cemetery on New Year's Eve with a couple of his other drunkard pals. And tells him the story about how apparently if you are the last person to die at the stroke of midnight on New Year's Eve, you get to be death's, they make it sound like you are not death yourself, you're just death's servant.
Yeah, that's a vibe I got, is if you're, the mythology at least set up in this movie, I don't know if there's a basis in real mythology, but if you're the last person to die on New Year's Eve, you're one of death's carriage drivers. But the implication I got is that there are other ones. You're not just the only one, but you're all work. These people are all, not, I would say employees of death, but sort of messengers of death, that go around and pick up souls for the next year. It was a year in our time, but they mentioned that when you're driving death's carriage, every night feels like it's 100 years long.
Yeah, so I guess one year for them would be 36,500 years.
Wow. Well, yeah, I didn't do the math. But yeah, shit.
It's the same. Yeah, it's like those people that did the math on Groundhog Day, that he's like something that he spends like 400 years by all the skills that he learns. He would have had to have spent like centuries living Groundhog Day or something like that.
I feel like it was like 10,000 years or something.
Yeah, I know it was something long. I couldn't remember the exact amount, but I know it is something like really, really insanely long that he would have had to have spent to do all the things that he did.
I guess that's your punishment. It's interesting how death becomes, like, time becomes a torture device, essentially. remember this like kids books, Remnants. I don't know if you ever read it, but it was like what K.A. Applegate did after Animorphs. And there were only 12, 14 books or something like that.
Only 12 or 14 books.
of Remnants, not Animorphs.
How many Animorphs did they do?
Oh, like 62 or something.
Holy shit.
Without all their like crossover and special. They had like a maybe like 10 more if you include all those extra like special things they added.
I remember as a kid feeling like it was overwhelming how many Animorph books there were. Now as an adult, like if a book series has more than 3, I'm just like, what is this?
Well, I thought that she was like a wonderful writer or something, and then I find out it's just ghost writers. Like she, what?
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Apparently, she wrote like the first 12 books, and then I don't think she wrote like any more books herself until like the last 2 books. Anytime it like randomly thanked somebody in the beginning of the book, that was the real writer of the book.
Really? Wow.
Like, yeah, so if I have my book series and it's like, thanks, James Reinhardt. James Reinhardt wrote that book. I did not write that book. But like, I guess they... Go ahead.
As a, like, James Patterson, if you notice, every James Patterson book is James Patterson and someone else. That someone else wrote the book. I guess Patterson just came up with the idea. And that person who's, like, you know, doesn't have the name recognition, they did all the writing. But, you know, James Patterson's name's always the big name, and then below it is, you know, with whoever.
Yeah, that's like, I think the same thing kind of happened with Stephen King when he did, what was it called? Not the Dark House. Well, it was Dark
Talisman.
House. Talisman. Because I read that, started to, and it's really rough. It's not Stephen King at all. Like, you can tell it's not his writing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Animorphs was like, I guess they just did the outlines and they wrote it. But it came out every month, so I think it was only out for like a couple years, like 3 or 4 years, and they were coming out monthly.
That's like The Strain, the TV show. It was a show on FX, was based on a book series by Guillermo del Toro and Chuck Hogan. But if you read the book, you're like, oh, Guillermo just came up with the idea. It's like Chuck Hogan wrote this thing.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. It is. It's a little crazy. I mean, it's just like it's name recognition, I guess.
Yeah.
But in Remnants, there was like a plot where the plot of the book series is an asteroid is going to hit Earth. So they basically put people in this spaceship with this hibernation technology that they have that's like iffy. And they basically just launch them into space like, good luck. Hopefully you find someplace. And there's one character that in his hibernation like birth, he never rests, like he never goes to sleep, like he thinks the entire time in like real time. And it's like 500 years before they get out of their like hibernation births, so it's like hell. And that's kind of what this Phantom Carriage reminds me of when they're talking about what did they, I forgot the math was, but like it's like a hundred
one nights, 100 years.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's what it is.
Yeah,
so, yeah, that just sounds like absolutely awful. But then kind of tying it into what we were talking about earlier with our Santa Claus movies, I guess it makes more sense when that guy has to go around and get every dead person individually. Like, he needs more time. He's just one guy and he's slow. He's on a carriage. And I'm assuming he's also just the Grim Reaper of his time zone. I'm not quite sure. I don't know if time zones matter.
I mean, this is like a dark Santa Claus tale, like, you know, or almost like Tim Allen's The Santa Claus, where he murders Santa Claus and then becomes Santa Claus. This is, you know, sort of like that, except, you know, it's just the mantle gets passed, but the same thing where like time passes and, you know, you gotta do your job. But I like your theory that like each time zone has their own Grim Reaper.
I feel like that's the only way it would work, if it's going to be like the stroke of midnight. Because if this would probably have to be going around before time, So it has to be based off of, I don't know, the rotation of the Earth or something. Like, I don't know. I don't know. I'm at, it's like Gremlins. If you overthink the roles, you start running into some problems.
You can remake the movie nowadays, and then you'll run into those places where they don't have time zones, or they give up daylight savings time, and it's like, well, whose jurisdiction is this area?
Mm-hmm.
Or you're like the guy that dies in the middle of the ocean or something, and yeah, your time zone has like no land on it, so you're like just live this like awful afterlife where you're just like, I don't know, slowly riding your carriage across the ocean. But
we kind of get that a little bit with the guy that he has to get off the bottom of the lake or something like that. I guess if you sunk, he would just like ride on the bottom of the ocean until he found you.
Well, I like too that like when you die, you don't like immediately pass on. You have to wait for this guy to like find you. So I wonder if anyone's just like dead for a very long time before he like gets to them.
One of my favorite parts of this is this is jumping ahead a bit, but where, you know, our main character quote unquote dies. Holy shit! I'll get back to it. But you know, the Grim Reaper shows up to tell him, you know, like, hey, you know, you died a stroke at midnight. Now you got to take over my job. And our main character tries to do what I've seen done in like so many cartoons, where he just tries to like lay back down in his body. I was like, I've seen like Looney Tunes and shit do this joke, and here's a movie doing it for real. But I just realized I watched this and Soul like within a couple of days of each other, and both sort of almost have the same setup where it's about, you know, a character that seemingly passes on, but doesn't want to let go of being alive. They both deal with the afterlife and living. But you know,
one's a drunk and one's a musician.
Yeah. I mean, one's about, you know, living and just appreciating life. Well, this one is about, you know, living a good life, and trying to, you know, make sure that, you know, the people that you care for are happy and not being a fuck up. Which, yeah, this dude is, he's pretty much a fuck up.
I do like the way that they show the flashbacks, if like to kind of show how his perspective is, like when he's talking to the two guys in the graveyard, and he says, oh, let me tell you about my buddy George. And he seems to remember that as like a very fond time, and like his buddy George being like real cool. Like, it's like my buddy George was great, and he told us all these stories, and we had great times. And then George shows up, and he's like, I'm sorry I made your life such shit. And he's like, what?
Yeah.
He's like, let me show you how terrible your life was, and it was my fault because I showed up and made you a drunk loser.
Yeah, it's one of those things where like a dude's living a shitty life, but you know, from his point of view, like he's having it pretty, you know, it's like, it is a lot like Ebenezer Scrooge, where like Scrooge thinks that he's perfectly happy doing what he's doing. And in this case, you know, like George ruined this other dude's life by getting him to become a drunkard along with him. But he doesn't see it that way. He has to kind of see the ramifications of his actions on the people around him.
Yeah, it almost is. It does. Like, the more and more I kept thinking about it while I was watching it and about how it follows, and I don't know if this is where the director or anybody got the idea from A Christmas Carol, but like, George shows him his past first, and then he kind of shows him his present by showing, he takes him to that, the Salvation Army sister to show her, like, you know, how he's affected her. Like, he kind of ruined her life too, because she's obsessed with trying to save him and now hates herself for, you know, causing other pain. And then he kind of almost gets shown like his future, to don't want to completely go to the ending, but like kind of gets shown what's going to happen to his wife and kids now that he's dead and no one's there to do anything about it. Like, he kind of is shown like past, present, and future all in one night. So it very much is Christmas Carol. Like, I have to think that someone involved, either the director or whoever wrote this, like, definitely did see or read. I guess you couldn't have seen it by then, because I don't know that anyone had adapted it, but definitely like read A Christmas Carol and was like, I could do that kind of the same way.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, I feel like the influence is definitely, and yeah, you're like, you're right. It does follow the same structure of like, you know, past, present, and future. And a guy, you know, and a guy who kind of sees the consequences of his actions upon other people.
I really love the mythology of it. Like, the whole idea is kind of cool to me because I don't know. When I was like young, I was like, when they first started talking about the afterlife, I did like a Bible study sort of a thing for like a small period of time because my dad was trying to appear to be like a good person or something. So like I got forced into that for like 2 years until I became an adult of the church, which I was like 12 years old. And it just meant that like I was able to do adult Bible study. And I said, all right, I'll do this. I'll continue to do this if you do this with me, Dad. And he decided not to. So that was it. That was the end of it. But I was always bummed out when I found out like when their idea is when you die, you don't even become an angel. You're just happy you're there. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's kind of boring. I was like, what about that Grim Reaper guy? Like, is that job up? Like, can anyone get that kind of job?
Is there an opening?
Yeah, like I think that'd be kind of a cool thing to do. This movie sets it up more kind of like a punishment. Like, well, I don't know. You're the last person to die of the year. You become this guy for the next year, or you work for this guy for the next year, essentially. It doesn't necessarily mean you're a good person or a bad person. It could be just poor timing. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't know. You died right before the clock struck midnight. You're the new Grim Reaper.
Yeah, this seems to follow the, you know, there's no good or bad afterlife. The afterlife, like life, is kind of indifferent. You know, like it's just your bad luck if you end up getting stuck in this position. But this, you know, like in A Christmas Carol, Marley's Scrooge's friend and appears to him, but Marley doesn't know why he's there. You know, he knows that he's there to help Scrooge, but he doesn't know like the power that has put him in that position. Whereas in this, it just happens to be luck where, you know, death comes to claim the next person that died, sees that as his old buddy and decides that he's going to, you know, try and help, you know, save his soul or whatever.
And I don't know if it's just like George's look. They don't really do anything to him besides he has to wear that like robe when he's the driver. But like, he looks like he was made for that job. Like he has like he has a really good look to it, where like he looks exactly like himself when he was alive. But like, yeah, I don't know how they did it. They kind of look like they didn't do anything to him, but like he totally fits that role, that imagery where he's wearing the robes and there's something ominous about him now.
Yeah, he's got the he's got the sickle, obviously. And then, like, there's one point, like, you know, because he's in a carriage drawn by the horses, and there's like one camera angle where it looked like you see the horse's ribs, and I'm like, holy fuck, like that horse looks, you know, looks really unhealthy. And I'm thinking, I'm like, this is the 20s, knowing them, they probably just didn't feed the goddamn thing. But then, then from like different angles, I realized that like they had the horses wearing like makeup to make it look like you could see their ribs and their like skeletons. And
this
like,
is 100 years ago. They were definitely starving those.
Yeah, they definitely were. But from this case, you know, they had just made them up to make it look like, because there are other angles where I was watching it, and I'm like, oh, okay, they just have that horse wearing paint or whatever to make it look like you could see its ribs. So it's slightly better than, you know, starving the thing.
They didn't care about horses. This is back, you know, when the early Westerns, where they're just straight up like, put up a trip wire and break its legs.
Yeah. early cinema.
Before you had to be like certified that you did not harm animals in your film. Mm-hmm. You just do whatever you want.
Or you have like HBO's Luck. Wasn't that called Luck?
Yeah, Luck. Like, where they had like three horses die in the production.
They killed
of
like three
nine
horses,
episodes.
Even even having like all these people to try to make sure the horses were fine, like they still ended up killing like three of them, and they're like they had to shut down the production.
Yeah, they had to completely cancel that show just because they were like, I think they might kill more horses if we make more seasons. Like,
I get the idea, but you can't have these horses that race like what, a couple times a day, probably race for like 9 hours straight.
Probably. Yeah. Like, can we get another take of that horse running? I don't know. He kind of looks really tired. Oh, he's fine.
He'll be perfectly fine. They're just all dropping dead. Yeah. Yeah, I just would love to know how this went over with audiences back then, 1921.
Yeah, so because would I.
The effects are like really fucking cool. Like, we kind of take the transparency like for granted. That's like a trick that we see like all the time now. Used also, like we said, Ghostbusters and stuff. Like, they use the same kind of tricks to make it look like you're transparent and dead.
Mm-hmm.
But I really did like the the trickery where they were taking the bodies, the souls out of the bodies, and I don't know if it was like a happy accident, but with the one that we were talking about where he's just like coasting on the ocean over the rocks and he like gets off, and I'm thinking like not sure exactly what the shot's gonna be once he gets off, like. But it really works really well where, like, he's able to go behind rocks without it affecting it.
Mm-hmm.
And he does look like he goes underwater when he gets off the carriage. Fucking sick. I don't know how they do it.
Yeah, it looks pretty damn good.
But, yeah, this movie, I always thought, like, the concept was really fucking cool. And I think the reason it's so familiar too is obviously it's influenced a lot of people. Bergman, I guess, says it's one of his favorite movies, and I obviously have hard like Shining vibes when he's busting through that door with the axe.
Yeah, I got that. I thought that too. I was like, oh boy, I see where they took a certain scene from The Shining from.
Yeah, I don't want to project. Like, I mean, for all you know, they were just like, I don't know, the door's locked. They need an axe to get through it. That's just naturally what you need. But, yeah, it was really weird when the character looked through the door and he said, where's Johnny? You know what I mean?
I was half expecting, like, a shot like that, because, like, I was really getting Shining vibes when he's breaking down that door. I'm like, oh, are they going to do a shot where he looks through the hole he made? But, which they didn't do, but I definitely,
and then he gets stabbed in the hand.
Yeah, yeah. But I definitely felt the influence at Kubrick's The Shining.
Yeah, and I would definitely agree with that feeling of that Bergman definitely likes this, because, yeah, I mean, he kind of does the same thing in Seventh Seal, where death isn't threatening. He's just there, like, it's just a job. Like, that's kind of how he is in, that's how he is in a Seventh Seal. He's not, like, he doesn't really care one way or another about getting that guy's soul. Like, that's just his job. His job is to take your soul. It's not he doesn't have like any ill feelings towards him. You know, they play their game back and forth, but it's just a job for him. It's not supposed to be like threatening or scary, even though this is, when I looked it up, this is labeled as a horror film. But there's nothing like inherently frightening about death. That's just another guy, and we're kind of told it could be anybody. Ago. Yeah, for 100 years ago, I guess it was probably scary for people.
Yeah, it was scary. Like, everyone lived to be 20.
Yeah. I'm sure. I was waiting for that guy, like, for them to show the, not George, well, even George or David, like, show, like, a tombstone of them. And it's like, here lies David, born 1896, died 1921. And be like, oh, my God, is that guy only, like, 25?
Well, that's, like, I saw it again where I rewatched Batman Returns, and it skips like 33 years in the future. So they're like, Penguin's supposed to be 33 years old, and he looks like he's like in his 60s.
Well, I mean, that makes sense for that character. He's raised in a sewer by fucking penguins, and he's deformed.
Toxic waste and
deformed
stuff.
Already. But yeah, I always appreciated the strange religious connotations in Batman Returns, where like you know, he's like Noah, and he's sent in a, not Noah, Moses, where he's sent in a basket down river, and he's 33, which is how old Jesus was. It's interesting.
That's like every time they show, sometimes you see like those old clips from like the 70s and 80s, where it'll be like, or something on like an Unsolved Mysteries, and they'll be like, he passed away when he was 19 years old, and they'll show a picture of him like, that guy was 19? He looks like he's 40. Like, it's just like, it's like, man, life just hit people a lot harder back then, I guess.
Kids look, people look different too, because they show like old senior photos of like, you know, everyone in the senior class in high school, and they all look fucking old. Like, yeah, they look like they'd be mid-30s.
Yeah, if you look at like and your grandfather's you stuff.
Yeah, and now you see pictures of seniors. Like, I'll watch something on Dateline, and it'll be like somebody that graduated high school from like 5 years ago. And everyone looks like babies to me. Like, everyone looks like they're in middle school or something. They do not look like they're adults. So we are looking better, I guess, as time goes along.
That's like I brought this up when we discussed Poltergeist a while ago, where I think the mom's character, she says she's 31. And I'm like, she's 31 and she has five kids. She lives in a big house in the suburbs. One of her kids is a teenager. I'm like, holy shit. I'm like, this is like the boomer dream right here. Like, I'm 31 and I have none of these things.
Yeah. I mean, we have a house. So.
Yeah. I'm like, I have a house. I'm like,
yeah. And it's, yeah. I mean, I don't know. My parents out of high school, not even going to college, had a house. They had a fucking boat. They had like three dogs. They went on vacations.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I mean, it was basically a fucking mess, and it was like a fantasy that wasn't real. But that's weird that the expectations, like, we're awful. Like, we're not doing something right that we don't have the same things. I'm like, if I could get a boat if I wanted to, maybe. if my credit's good. But that's going to be really fucking expensive, and I can't probably afford that.
Yeah. I mean, times have changed. So, you know, we're happy just to have homes, which is sad.
We're just happy to be here. But, yeah, this movie, I don't know. I think it's a really good movie by itself. The plot's interesting. The special effects are great. And then on top of it, like, the mythology kind of gets my mind going. And I kind of, like, really like thinking about what this world is outside of the movie a little bit. Yeah. Death has always fascinated me. I don't want to be dark here. I don't know what there is, if there's anything. But I kind of like this idea. Like, I think being like a spirit would be kind of cool for a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I feel like at first it might be cool to be death and ferry people to the other side. But I feel like if every night feels like 100 years, then it would definitely start to weigh on me.
You die New Year's Eve, I die the next New Year's Eve. And I'm like, how was it? And you're like, it wasn't that bad.
Well, yeah, it's not bad.
I kind of dug it for a little bit. I mean, you're never tired or anything, so.
You know, I hope you kind of get something nice after doing that. Like, I hope that there is like a nice reward waiting for you for if you're gonna be death's horseman for a year.
There's still the concept of heaven and hell. So, like, you get to the end of your contract. And they're like, well, you're actually a bad person, so you're going to hell. You're
like, yeah, that would suck, man. Be like, well, you know, sorry.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you get some reincarnation or something. They're like, it's a rarity, but it does happen. So we'll give you another shot.
Mm.
That's that. That was the two. There's two things that I wondered at the end of this movie. One was what happened to the sister. Because he seems, you know, death goes and he takes everyone's soul. And when he gets to, when he shows the sister, you know, that David died and, you know, his life kind of, he didn't really fix his life the way that she thought he was going to. But he says like the same phrase, like release, soul be released from your prison. But then he takes David away and says, others are coming for her. So like, is she, my first thought almost was like that she, due to her kindness, is like going to be a saint or something like that. And like angels are going to come down and take her. Cause it's weird that he doesn't take her soul. He says others will come for her.
Yeah, I thought about that too. I'm like, oh, okay, so does, you know, she get something special because of, you know, what she's done?
That's how it felt to me, like, her selflessness, like, she was gonna be granted, like, some sort of other experience, like everyone else, kind of like how we were thinking.
So
like,
maybe he was taking people to hell. Maybe he just collects the bad people.
I don't know. I don't know if he was taking them to hell, or kind of like we said, like, is it just, like, is it just kind of like everyone's like how you were saying, like how you were taught that you're not actually an angel. You're just in the afterlife and you should just be happy to be there. But maybe due to her good acts, she actually will be an angel or something like that. I don't know. It was weird and it's never resolved, but it definitely seems like she does die and he doesn't take her. He says someone else is going to come for her. So that was my question there. My other question at the end, I guess, We've kind of gone over a lot of the movie, but David gets to have his life back and get a second chance. So does it just default to whoever died like right before him on New Year's Eve?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I was wondering about that too. I'm like, oh, so who? I mean, I want that poor person who thought they got out clear, but then and then they're like, oh no, the Grim Reaper before you had second thoughts. So now it's you.
It was either that or I wondered if. The other thing, the other way I kind of took it was when George allows him to have his second chance, he says, like, I don't need to pray for you anymore, David, or something like that. So I wonder if it's like maybe he could make a deal where he is going to be Death's driver for another year in David's place. Like, he showed him the error of his ways, and now that he repented, like, he's like, okay, I'll take your place for another year, and you get to have your life again.
I mean, he is drunk. It could all be in his head. You know? he could have got knocked out or something.
This would have been the classic, it's all in your mind, it's all a dream ending, you know, the first one.
I guess it could
have been all... Yeah, it could have all been a dream, but maybe they were, like, smarter and being like, well, we can't say that. We'll just leave it up to interpretation.
I mean, that would be a bold move for a movie from 1921. But I could buy that. You know, that maybe it was all in his head, but if so, you know, the film's gonna leave it up to you to decide.
Maybe somebody died at the exact same time as him, so they were like, that's why you're getting off. Yeah, I don't know what the remake of this would be. I'm sure it would be terrible, and it'd be a bunch of stuff that we never gave a shit about.
Yeah.
But I do have, like, I'm getting, like, off of what Chuck was asking about the, is an angel coming for her? I kind of get like Dogma vibes, these are the types of characters that would be showing up, like written by Kevin Smith. I'm the angel. It's my job for 100. I died the first day of the year, so I became an angel. Yeah, mocking it a little bit or something. But yeah, it is. I thought it was kind of cool that it was. I like the role of New Year. Something about it, like, I don't know. There's not a lot of mythology to New Year New Year's that I can think of. It's just generally, you know, keeping track of our days, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. I never. There really isn't that much as far as New Year's mythology or New Year's stories.
Yeah, like, why is it important? The Earth has rotated around the sun one time.
Ours is weird that we, in, like, the Western world, we celebrate our New Year kind of, I don't know, I guess, like, on an arbitrary day. Like, I don't know who decided it, but, like, other cultures, like Chinese, they celebrated on, I think they technically celebrated on, like, the solstice. Like, they actually celebrated on some sort of, like more of like an actual like new year, like everything's changing of the seasons type. I don't know how else to phrase it, but like we celebrate New Year here, but like in a lot of other cultures, technically the New Year is on a completely different date.
Our math wasn't perfect. It's like, I don't know how familiar you are with like astrology, but the actual science behind the astrology is like whatever constellation is behind the sun is like your sign for that day. And everything's been outdated by like 300 years because everything's been moving. So if you like are like, I'm on the cusp of like a Libra and a Scorpio, but if you actually look at the constellation that was behind the sun on the day that I was born, it's Virgo. That's what one was actually there. So by like what you're saying there, like the Chinese New Year type of they're actually going by like the solstice and stuff. That's what I actually am. But then I've had people that are really into astrology and they're like, it's 100% based on your birthday. But then I'm like, well, that kind of just ignores the entire idea of what your sign is when you were born. The only reason I know what my sign was is because in an astronomy class, my teacher had this really nerdy program where you could type in where you were born and like the day, and it would show you exactly where the stars were on that exact day, so you could see.
That's cool.
It is a little cool, but yeah, I guess it makes sense when we're like what 364.25 days around the sun. Is that what it is? Or is it like 0.75 or something?
Yeah.
That's why we have our, I guess it'd be 25. That's why we have leap year.
Yeah, I guess. I saw, it was a couple years ago around New Year's, someone was like, I think it was on New Year's Eve, someone was like, I guarantee at some point today, Neil deGrasse Tyson posts, happy arbitrary day in the lunar cycle. and then he did later on that day, and everyone's like, oh, yeah, hate being right all the time. But you know, I don't know. I feel like New Year's is important to have that sort of mental clean slate. Wash yourself mentally of the bullshit from the last year and going into the new year. Hopefully this year, I think we all need it. I mean, hopefully 2021 will be an improvement.
I don't want to say anything. I want to have zero expectations. I mean, I told Steph, I was like, as awful as everything is, and it might still be awful by her standards, she got to spend more time with me than she's ever got to spend any other year. Like, I don't know if that's a good thing or not. I was trying to be positive, like, look at all this time you got to spend with me. And she's probably like, oh my God, this pandemic needs to be over.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, that's one thing about this year is like Alexi and I got to spend a lot of time together, and you know, I enjoyed all the time we spent together. So that is one thing I am grateful for is, you know, that we obviously, you know, because we couldn't go out all the time we spent, but you know, we enjoy each other's company, obviously. So it was fine.
Yeah, it's a good experiment for some people. I heard there were like a lot of divorces and stuff. So people that probably shouldn't have been together found out.
Yeah, that's the thing is, you see, like, I see so many people complaining on social media about being home with their kids, and I'm like, oh,
kids are different, kids are terrible.
I guess, but I'm just like, you know, I'm just like, oh, okay, it's really great seeing which people hate their kids. But yeah, then like, you know, I was saying, someone like, you know, my dad has always hated going out. He hates going shopping. He hates going to movies, to concerts, anything like that. And now this year, like he's been like a very vocal proponent for opening everything back up. And I'm like, what are you all said, Mr. Fucking Social? But it's mostly because he's now stuck at home all the time with my mom, which he does not like. So yeah, I feel like this year has definitely highlighted that for a lot of people is, you know, how much can you stand your partner? And I'm happy to say that, you know, it's been a great experience.
Good. That's awesome. It'd be really weird if you were very vocal about the opposite.
Yeah, it would be, but I feel like there have been people that have been like, oh, I hate it.
I think some people expect things without any sort of work.
Yeah.
I don't think any relationship's perfect, but I like being with Steph too. So like I find it to be nice. I just kind of joke though. I'm like I think she's a very intelligent person, but she has also decided to marry me. And I don't know if that takes her down a few notches. Like, I don't want to be mean to my wife. But, like, that's the decision where I'm like, I don't even know if I would marry me. You know, like, I feel like it's more like a make-a-wish thing or something. Like, she's just being really nice to me.
No, I'm like that about myself, too. I'm like, I don't know why she's still marrying me, but, you know, I must have something going for me.
Your catch?
I guess I am. I don't know. I find it hard to see.
You, when you have your like wedding vows, you're just very egotistical. You're like, you are so lucky that you found me. Oh man. But yeah, I'm excited to see where our podcast goes for this year. It looks like we're going to be back on like a regular schedule. It probably won't be like remote like this for a little bit. We're going to test the water with guests, I guess. We'll see how that goes. Remotely. You'll be hearing somebody that sounds like Peanuts teachers or something. But yeah. I saw that we were getting New Year's Day on a Friday, and I'm like, oh, we should definitely do like a New Year's movie. And this was 100 years old. I don't know. I don't know. I was like 19. Like, I think that's what it was. I think it was the year in my head. 21. Yeah. 2021.
1921. I mean, yeah, it's going to be an interesting year. I mean, you know, hopefully... Maybe at the end of hopefully, you know, this time next year we'll be doing this, you know, together in a room, or not. Maybe we're just gonna be like, yeah, fuck it, we like doing remote better.
It's worse. We're just all isolated.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, I think we're gonna have an interesting year for the podcast. We got some interesting picks coming up in the next few weeks.
Yeah, Chuck's theme.
Yeah, I guess I don't know. I guess we can maybe announce it at the end of this. You know, falls on New Year's Day. We can say as much as we've just talked about getting past 2020, the first month of 2021 is going to be talking about 2020 and all the movies. You know, we kind of didn't get a lot. We had a couple new ones. We did Bill and Ted. And at the end of the year, you know, we got Wonder Woman and Soul, but other than that, we did not get a lot of movies that came out last year to talk about. So we'll go back and maybe highlight some of those that people probably missed or, you know, maybe forgot about, even if they did see them.
Yeah, I mean, I think we kind of got lucky, too, where it's like the focus wasn't on these, like, big blockbusters. Like, some of these smaller films really got some room to breathe and got some eyes.
Yeah,
which I think's nice.
I feel like that's, I mean, we could probably go into this more, you know, for next theme, which is 2020, but I feel like if anything, 2020 was kind of the year of the smaller movies, because we didn't have these big blockbusters, because, you know, they need theaters to recoup their costs and whatnot. So, but indie movies could kind of still get VOD releases or limited releases, you know, with very little of that working against it. And I feel like this was kind of that year, the year of the smaller movie, which I kind of like, you know, which was one of the strange, unexpected, you know, good things about 2020 is that these smaller movies got a lot more attention than I think they normally would. Except the one that my pick for next month, that one is somehow been forgotten, but we'll talk about it. We'll talk.
Well, there's a time called January and February of 2020, which feels like 5 years ago. Because, yeah. Like, I was thinking the other day, like, Soul came out And I was like, oh, it's nice that we still got a Pixar movie. But we got two Pixar movies because Onward was definitely in the same year.
Oh, I forgot.
But it definitely feels like it was like 2 years earlier.
Yeah.
That's how long ago it feels.
I remember because I saw, you know, I was at the theaters a lot in January and February. And pretty much every movie that I'd seen in theaters during that time, I really liked. And I was like, oh, man, 2020 is really shaping up to be a good year for movies. And then everything went tits up. But
well, you still don't even know because, like, I haven't watched it yet. I know you both have. But Tenet, like, there's so much talk about, like, oh, everyone's so excited about Tenet. And then it seemed like, I don't know, most people's reactions were pretty mediocre.
Yeah.
So it's like, I mean, that happens all the time. Like, I'm pumped about the new James Bond movie, and it got pushed back. It's a whole year back now, and I could watch that movie and it sucks. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's nothing that says that's gonna be a good movie. I'm just excited about it.
Yeah. Time hop reminded me that I shared a Twitter a year ago yesterday. I was like, oh, all these movies are coming out in 2020, like James Bond, Godzilla versus Kong, Wonder Woman. I was listing like pretty much every, oh, The Eternals, Black Widow. I'm like, 2020 is going to be a good year for movies. And then I like reshared it on Twitter and I'm like, this did not age well.
Well, that's like you watched something on Shudder called Spiral. Hmm. And I was like, oh, yeah, we never got the Saw Spiral with Samuel Jackson and Chris Rock.
Yeah, it's like, because I kept hearing about how good Spiral was, and I'm like, wait, the Saw movie? Like, did they release that VOD? I didn't know that. But no, it's a different horror film called Spiral that's on Shudder.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely been weird. I feel like every year, though, you get excited about these movies that you're well aware of, like the Marvel movies and the sequels.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's always that one that's like not on your radar that you end up just like loving.
Yeah.
Like, I think like the year that like Arrival came out, I'm like, oh, Arrival's so fucking good. Not on my radar at all. Like, no, like vaguely, I saw a trailer with aliens and I'm like, all right, looks okay. And then I went and saw it and was like, that movie was fucking awesome.
Yeah, I agree. Every movie that I'm like, you know, the one that's not on my radar that surprises me usually ends up being my favorite, or one of my favorites of the year.
That's why I latch on the directors like a little bit more, or at least like the same creative teams, because then I have like a pretty good idea. Like when Halloween came out and it was all the people that were doing like Eastbound and Down and stuff, I'm like, I actually think they do a decent job at a Halloween movie. Mm-hmm. So like I was excited, and then when I saw the movie I was like, yeah, that's kind of exactly what I was expecting.
Yeah.
Or you have something like I don't know. I'm trying to think of like Wes Anderson. He has a new movie that was coming out, didn't come out, that got pushed back. But I'm like, I have no idea. I have no idea what the plot is, but I have a good idea that I'm going to enjoy the movie, and I have a good idea of what the movie's going to feel like. So that's what excites me. And my memory might be wrong too, but I feel like at the end of the year we talked about like what we were like excited about coming in the next year too.
We probably did.
We jinxed it.
Yeah.
But man, oh man. Well, I guess, are there any final thoughts about this movie, The Phantom Carriage?
I mean, I think it's, you know, really where I don't think a lot of people know about it. I was, because I share on Instagram and Twitter what I'm watching, and Brad messaged me. He had no idea what this movie was, but I would say definitely check it out. Like, it's a really interesting piece of film history. It's on the Criterion channel and it's on YouTube, so it's accessible, and it's really interesting to watch visually and from a story perspective.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. It's, you know, for being free on Netflix, I saw like 5 different versions uploaded on there, and one of them was the Criterion version, so it looked pretty decent and the soundtrack was good on it, so there's almost not a reason to not go out and watch it. It's available for free, and it's a really good story. Stay in and
watch it. I said stay in and watch it.
Yeah.
Are the different versions on Netflix like different audio? Because since it was it's a silent movie, there wasn't any. They just kind of like guess this is what the music would be playing when you went to go see it in theater.
Shush. Sorry, I wasn't shushing you. I was shushing my dog.
Do you know, Chuck?
I don't know. The version I watched was just the Criterion version, but I don't know if the other versions had different audio specifically for them.
I watched it on Criterion's Blu-ray, and it did have an option to change the audio track to different types of music, but I didn't even look at it. I just played what I guess was probably... going by them, what was the most accurate to what they would be playing at the time. But, yeah, I mean, the only thing about this movie that I didn't really talk about that kind of also really impressed me is I think the acting in this movie is wonderful. Like, nothing's overacted, which back then, well, it sounds like it. 100 years ago, you're getting a lot of things that seem to be like, people are very theatrical and very over the top. And this captures like a lot of really good subtle moments with these characters that like, even if you didn't have the dialogue, which you kind of do need the little sound bites to know what the hell is going on. Otherwise you just have like some guy sitting there talking to people over campfire and then Grim Reaper shows up, you know? Yeah, I kind of thought that like it was like the beginning of like that subtle, like the camera's capturing everything so you don't have to be over the top. But that plus the cool story plus the mythology that like I want to piece together after that plus the special effects. Yeah, I think it's great. And it's accessible, as you guys said.
Yeah.
That's the Phantom Carriage episode. You can find me on Twitter. I'm at JJMorgan19.
I'm at James Reinhardt.
ChuckFin66.
And I want to thank you guys for listening.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you guys. And Happy New Year to you guys and our listeners.
We'll hope it's a good one.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we can only hope. Go into this year optimistically, but keep our expectations reasonable.
Yeah. I'll be hopeful.
Mm-hmm.
For Bond. All right. Thank you, guys.
All right. Thank you.
We are Cinema D'Amore. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter to stay up to date with news and information on upcoming episodes. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podbean, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible, Pandora, Alexa, or iHeartRadio. It would be greatly appreciated if you subscribe to our podcast on your platform of choice. We also appreciate feedback, so rate us, review us, and let us know what you think. And above all else, thank you for listening.